You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
So we are acquired, and we're kind of given the, don't worry, guys, this is happening, but there's, you know, it's just business as usual. Right now, it's business as usual. There's just a guy walking outside of apartments with a noose, but he's just, it's okay. Not yet.
Nothing's happening over here.
It's all right. It was all right. It was business as usual until it wasn't. About 80% of us were gone.
Everyone, this is Serving Corporate, the podcast that helps to navigate tricky corporate waters. I'm Eileen Mercil.
And I'm Glenda Pakenhams. And speaking of navigating corporate waters, today we're going to talk about one of the most important skills you should be working on to stay afloat during these really turbulent times.
Sucking up.
Yes, well, that definitely helps. But the skill I'm talking about is adaptability, Eileen. Adaptability. You know, these days it feels like 1 minute you're king of the world and the next you're laid off, or your boss was laid off, or your team was annihilated and half of them were laid off. And it just feels horrible.
And like we talked about last week, one of the things that could happen is that your company is, you know, acquired by a much bigger company. And that means a whole new set of leadership is walking through that door.
Exactly. But before we talk about that topic specifically with today's amazing guest, I thought we should start by diving into the subject with an interesting perspective we found from Steve Cadigan, who's the former CHRO of LinkedIn. He's also the author of the book Workquake. And as a thought leader of the future of work, Cadigan says that in today's workplace, someone's adaptability quotient, or AQ, you know, a measure of someone's ability to master new information. God, that made me sound so smart. It's actually, he says it's one of the most important traits that recruiters are looking for these days.
Yes. And he says that your adaptability quotient measures how you spot relevant data, how you unlearn old information and old habits, and how you demonstrate a commitment to changing the way you work. So this basically means that the more comfortable you are learning new things and being able to let go of previous habits, the better your odds are to be successful and to be on that list of people that will be valuable for the company, because you can learn, you're open to, and you can learn new skills quickly. So a company is always going to change. And if you show that you can change with them, you're going to be good for them. But if you're, on the contrary, one of those people who is resistant to change or new ideas, like Canva, no, PowerPoint is good. It's good. Or, you know, there's no way this process could ever work. Or we've been doing it this way for 5 years and there's nothing wrong with it. If you're one of those people, then you're probably not going to be on the A-list for the company to keep you on.
Yeah. And listen, while it's true that you might be right in thinking that the previous way of doing things might be better, and we talked a lot about this in our first episode of the season, it's actually really important to reiterate that showing that you're open to considering new ideas and new ways of thinking and new ways of doing things is, especially nowadays, a really huge plus. Trust me, it's worth it to keep an open mind. New leaders, new managers, they want to feel that you want to contribute to their vision and not hold them back to the good old days when we did everything in this certain way and it worked perfect.
And I think it's important to also point out, people, that it is not easy when new people join the company and they come in with what seems to be, you know, they know every single thing, and they're teaching you things that you already know, and you just want to scream into a fucking pillow. And I say that because I've done it. I had a scream pillow in my office that
really
is
she
full
really
of
did.
Like bacteria and saliva. But sometimes they do bring in a fresh new lens, and it's something that can push you out of your comfort zone and surprisingly lead you to growth and acquire new skills.
Yes. What we're basically saying is that we know that change is hard, but being adaptable and challenging yourself to doing things differently, learning new things, learning new terms, new processes, new styles of communication, all of that good stuff, it's absolutely exhausting. We get it. We know. We've been there. But in today's environment, adaptability is a definite must-have trait. Well, that and probably having a good sense of humor really helps. Right, Eileen?
Yes. And it's something that we talk about constantly on this podcast. You have zero control over tons of things, but the way that you face things makes a huge difference. And always finding the humor in things or finding the people that have humor in things is going to go a long way. And today's guest is a perfect example of someone who is adaptable and whose amazing use of humor has allowed him to now make a living of it, even though he's not exempt from going through tough moments and perhaps screaming into a pillow or a dark void. He is also what we would call a corporate renegade, meaning that he does not fit your typical corporate employee mold. He is a person who speaks his mind. He occasionally challenges the establishment to the point that his boss calls him chaotic good. Jordan Stratton is an editor and social media manager for The Dad, the number one most engaged family media brand on the internet. He also writes, shoots, and produces The Dad's celebrity interview series, Getting Grilled, which has led to conversations with the likes of Ryan Reynolds, Matthew McConaughey, and former White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. So clearly coming to chat with us is a major upgrade for you.
I'm telling you, Jordan, I'm so glad that we can squeeze in a little bit of time to have you on, we really want to boost your career.
Congratulations.
I just think charity work has, plays a big part in my life.
Thank you so much for your charity.
No, stop it. That was very generous. That was a very generous intro. I appreciate that.
I have a really important question to ask, and it's one that I've given a lot of thought to, Jordan. How dreamy is Matthew McConaughey?
How what is he?
Like, how dreamy?
He's very...
For me, it would be Ryan Reynolds. I'd want to know about Ryan Reynolds.
I'm sorry, yes. Ryan, please.
Both very charming. Not as intimidating as I thought they would be, to be honest. Both just very gracious and down-to-earth fellas.
So are you still in contact?
Yeah, we're just buds. We're just gabbing on the weekends.
Love it. I'm sure you are.
Well, welcome to Surfing Corporate, Jordan. We really, really are so excited to talk to you.
Thank you so much. I am happy to be here.
With all this intro that we gave, the fact is that you in the last years have had to adapt to a whole new work environment as well, right? Because The Dad's parent company got acquired by a much larger company and lots of things have shifted rapidly around. All of a sudden, you have a new boss and a new boss's boss, and it's not an easy time, right, for anybody that's going through something like that. Before we get into the details of that, we want to know a little bit more about you. You have a Bachelor of Arts degree with focus in psychology, yes, and
yes,
a Master's in Arts focused on mental health counseling, which naturally led you to become a comedy content creator in the digital space. How did that happen?
Yeah, counseling was something that I felt that I was inherently pretty good at. I've always enjoyed being with people, talking with people, making people laugh. Because of that, that lent itself naturally to a counseling role where it's all about connection, right? After a couple years in the field, I started recognizing some symptoms of burnout, and I just wasn't feeling fulfilled. I wasn't looking forward to work. I wasn't looking forward to getting up in the morning, which is the last thing you want in a mental health professional. And I was using, sound like it's about to go down a very dark road. I started using, but it was a drug called social media.
Yeah, that dark rabbit hole.
Yeah, it was, I started getting deeper and deeper in that little dubious hellscape known as Twitter.
But when you say, sorry, just to clarify, when you say Twitter, it's you writing jokes, like not you just stalking and scrolling mindlessly. It's you writing jokes, doing comedy. Is that was your approach?
Yes, I would say that was kind of the thing I was using to unplug my mind from the things that were not as fun during my day job. It was that levity that I needed, when I had you know, coworkers who didn't quite share my my deep and intelligent sense of humor, you know. I had to find like-minded people. And thankfully I did. You know, it's as much as we like to drag social media and the detriments, there sometimes it actually does what it's supposed to do, and you meet like-minded people and you build actual human relationships, and it can turn into something great. And one day I met the venerable Joel Willis. I think you guys have met.
Oh yeah. Huge fans.
We are huge Joel Willis
fans. Huge fans. All three of us. We should start a fan club. New podcast.
Joel Willis was the editor and like founder, like the person behind the dad in its initial phases, and Joel.
And we also had him on as a Surfing Corporate podcast guest. So that check his episode out.
Check it out. It's a good one. I've listened to myself. Highly recommend. Five stars.
Five stars.
Joel is a very solid guy, friend, and easily the best boss I've ever had. He and I met, and we kind of met in a DM room. This is back in the day where like people just like throw other people in DM rooms and just like see what happens. It's like tossing just a bunch of live grenades in a room and just be like, let's see what happens. Thankfully, in this circle of Twitter where we were, you know, humor is a big thing. And so it's just people wanting to have fun, wanting to, you know, get to know other people in their lives. And it was just a very friendly, welcoming space and time. I know that a lot of those adjectives aren't usually used when describing Twitter, but in this specific group, I mean, this is probably like 5 or 6 years ago. There's probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 of us. And we decide to actually let's take this offline. And we all met up in Portland, Oregon. And it was great. It was like, oh my God, like these are people who understand me, who get me, who understand, you know, the way my brain ticks. And Joel has been working for Scary Mommy, another parenting site, a sister site, if you will. And so this is the first time that he and I are just like chilling together. And he's like, so let me tell you, I know you see me working a little bit, you know, on Scary Mommy stuff. I've been tapped to start an offshoot that's focused more on fatherhood. And would you be interested? And I'm at this point in my job where I'm dying for something else. But I was also raised very traditional. Like you go to school, you go to college, you go here, you have this mapped out, you do what your degree says until you die, and that's it. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. Everything else outside of that realm terrified me, the idea of it. But I'm also, I love this group of people, and I love when people say I'm good at something. And so if you say, wow, you're great at that, you're like, I am, and I'll do it forever for you. Like, that's all you need to tell me.
I did not know this story about how you guys met through a random Twitter chat and then in real life, and then you became, you know, coworkers.
But talk about those like huge moments in your life where something that started off as an outlet for, you know, for yourself, you know, that creativity you had, that burnout you were starting to feel, blossomed in like the coolest of ways.
He wasn't even my boss yet, but is there anything better that a manager or a boss or a mentor can say to you? Because it's not just saying you are good at something and I recognize that, but it's I understand you. I see you.
Yeah.
It's not just saying you are a cog in this machine. It's saying I know you as a person. You are good at this. And I know you would not be a good fit for these things, but I know exactly where you'd be a good fit.
But Jordan, at the beginning of the show, we were talking about adaptability and how things are changing so fast in today's workforce. And in your case, as we mentioned before, this company, the dad and its parent company, who was doing really, really well, clearly they were doing so well that a much bigger company wanted to acquire it and acquired it, right? And that happens because the people working there clearly were doing a really, really good job to take it to that point of success. But, you know, clearly when a new company comes in, new leadership comes in, regardless of how well you've done things until that moment, they're going to, you know, decide what they think is the best way to move things forward and how they think you can grow things, how you can make even more money, or also known in corporate terms as scale? How do we scale? How do we scale? And as someone who was in the middle of that process and creativity was a huge part of what you did, clearly the management was something that you joined because of the people around you. And now everything is changing, no? And it's changing pretty quickly. As someone who's been through this, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, it was very novel for me. It's important to understand like that my introduction to corporate life was very non-traditional. You know, at that initial company, I started just writing goofy memes and articles and scripts and everything has been remote from the start.
Whoa,
for 5 years now. I've gone into an office in 5 years. So I've never had,
to engage. Of having your cubicle next to the kitchen when your coworker decides to bring in last night's fish and reheat.
Yes, Branzino, you love it at 11 a.m. No, I haven't. I haven't had to engage in awkward small talk around a water cooler. You know, it's always just been
waiting for the coffee.
Yeah, yeah. The only, you know, if anyone wants to talk to me, they have to actively type it out on something usually. And that's usually enough of a barrier to make people just, you know, stop having small talk, which I'm all a fan of, not having small talk.
This is very interesting, though. Yeah, that you haven't had that direct in-person corporate experience yet. You've been working in corporate through this very particular
right.
way.
And it was a unique funnel down. So like I know who people in management are, but still to this day in that old company, I was there for 3 years, never met these people. You know, it was all kind of filtered
Wow.
through my direct management who I had great relationships with. And
okay, so you had a buffer there. So that must have been nice. Okay.
I did.
Cool.
Yeah. It was kind of like, you know, if something like bad's happening, my parents are telling me like what's going on in the news. It's like, oh, well, let's put it in terms that his little brain won't explode and melt out of his
it's
ears.
He's not a serial killer.
He's just going to sleep for a really long time.
So
dark moments in this podcast that I didn't anticipate.
But this is important because wouldn't you say that until that buffer is removed, you think that that's the way things are? And then suddenly this person.
I'm thinking this is easy.
Like, I'm cruising. Woohoo.
This is great.
Yeah. Corporate is easy. And then boop, a person like that is removed. And you're like, oh no,
right.
The dam is opening.
Right.
Right. Drowning.
So we are acquired and we're kind of given the, don't worry, guys, this is happening, but there's, you know, it's just business as usual. I don't know how many times I heard the phrase business as usual for
months.
Oh
my God, yes.
Don't worry about it, everybody. Like right now, it's business as usual. There's just a guy walking outside of apartments with a noose, but he's just, it's okay. Not yet.
Keep focused. Nothing's happening over here. Nothing's happening.
Make your little jokes. It's all right. Until it was so, and it was all right. It was business as usual until it wasn't, you know? And so, you know, then it kind of became, okay, guys, we're going to have an important meeting today. You're like, oh, the tone of that information is different. The invitation has changed a lot. And they ended up, about 80% of us were gone. So.
Wow.
I mean, in hearing you describe that whole situation, Jordan, like, clearly, you're very funny at describing it. So, like, you kept it light, but that must have been really, really hard. I mean, clearly, when a situation like that happens, people take on different roles or different attitudes, or they go into different mindsets, right? There's some people who will become like the cheerleaders and it's going to be great and don't worry, it'll be fine. And the other people are like the Debbie Downers of like, oh my God, our world is over. So I'm just curious, like I have a feeling I know, but I just want to hear from you. What was your mindset during this process? I mean, were you you've already said you're a positive sort of optimistic person, but I want to hear from you, like how you saw it.
I did say that. However, it's kind of like one of these things, like, depends on the day. You know, I'm kind of a pendulum. You know, there's some days where, you know, I'm feeling like, you know what, I have control over this. There's definitely a lot to look forward to. And there's a lot of great things about my role. And there's some days where I'm like, we could just burn the building down and I would feel nothing.
Keep it real, Jordan. Keep it real.
It's tough because you are... All of that stuff that I said about, you know, when I was initially brought on about proper management and mentors, and when they can see you and they understand you and just how good that feels, and it motivates you, it fills you up, and it makes you want to be even better, you know, just to reinforce that, oh, they see that. I want to show them that they're not wrong about me. Flip that on its side, and that is someone who doesn't see you, and the things that you value do not align whatsoever with the things that they value. It's hard. It's really hard to relate when those are the things that you're up against. And so it can feel very isolating, especially when you've diminished a team down from 10 to 12 people to 3, you know? So it's difficult to go into a job and say, I really want to work hard for these people, when all the things that you value don't align with theirs.
That's so hard, though.
And it's very typical when you have a smaller company that has more of this kind of startup vibe. It's a small team. You all know each other. Mm-hmm. You have all these things in common. When those companies, and it, you know, it happens, if you're doing a good job, the sad thing is inevitably it'll lead to probably an acquisition, or even the same company growing exponentially more and having more and more people and more processes. And that leads to many times this disconnect where what you were in this thing for in the beginning shifts. And it's like, where is that magic or that thing that made me want to come to work every day, despite not having maybe all the resources or all, you know, the fancy things and perks that big companies give you? It's like one things change and shift for others. And at the end of the day, what is the most important part for you? And during these transitions, as Glenda and I always talk, you know, even though they are very, very, very hard, sometimes there's things where you're like, okay, this is going to be hard. This is going to be very challenging, but there's A, Y, or Z that I can learn from this or take away from this. And it may lead for me to stay, or it may lead for me to say, okay, I've learned A, B, and C. Now it's time to go. No?
No, I think you're right. It's hard when you have, you know, a smaller company. Smaller companies inherently, just like a smaller ship, they're easy to navigate. You can turn on a dime. You know, you can make these adjustments quickly and efficiently and effectively. And when you get purchased by a larger company that has been doing things a certain way, and they've seen positive effects from it, you know, it's going to take a lot more work to get that big ship to kind of alter its course in a way. Once it's been heading this way at a very fast speed, why would they change? And I understand that. I understand that there with acquisitions come growth opportunities.
But that's true. That's true.
Which I hate. I hate
all sorts of stretch opportunities, as we like to call
stretch
them.
Assignment. Stretch assignments. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So how do you think you have fared during this process? Like when we're talking about adaptability and seeing all these very, 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 very hard things that you're faced with, you and your team of three were led to see what they saved. And, you know, how I can only imagine it's like, this is our child, no? This brand that we've created and we spent the last few years. Okay, how do we keep this true to what it is? And at the same time, be able to accommodate the new objectives or the new goals or whatever is the new people, the new leadership are asking you for. How do you think you fared in adapting or you know, getting those two things in line?
Not great.
I love the honesty.
So you're clearly still in the like the thick of it. This is still very much part of your day-to-day reality now, where you're trying to navigate this new situation that's very difficult. And I think it especially is hard for creatives. I mean, we all come from the creative space. You know, Eileen and I are from media. You're from the digital creative space. And I think that this is something I've talked about with so many people, that when you can marry your passion with your day-to-day job, that feels like you almost won the lottery, right? Because so few people get to do that. And if you're doing it and you're doing it successfully and you're doing it and you're being rewarded for it, you're being, you know, acknowledged and you feel like you're part of something bigger, that just gives you this sense of like achievement and like you're in the zone, right? I've been there. I know what that feels like. So when that gets flipped on its head, and that changes to completely the 180 degree version of that, like the upside down version of that, it is devastating. Like, I know that that can feel so difficult, but like, I have to believe that even though you're in a really tough situation right now, the fact that you're called, quote, chaotic good, there's still something in this process that you're going to learn from. Somewhere in this day-to-day scenario, like, you still have that in you. So how are you tackling your day-to-day? What are you doing to try to make sure that you still have that spark, that you still have that thing? Like,
when I am feeling stuck or stagnant, there's a little part of my soul that dies. Like, and that goes for everything. That goes for relationships. It goes for jobs. It goes for just daily life. It goes for hobby, like everything. Like, if I feel like I'm just stuck, I'm either going to sit and wallow in it and just feel like I'm slowly fading away. I'm always looking for ways to innovate. And when you have the right management, that I remember when I was working under Joel, when he was still there, that was one of the, when we were doing an employee review. And I think he said, my greatest strength was that I'm constantly looking to improve and to innovate and to change. And so I was always pretty hesitant to speak my mind in a lot of my jobs and a lot of these roles where I was working under somebody, because I thought, I'm not the expert here. I don't know. But when you have years of working with someone who celebrates that, then it's like a drug. It's like I'm like, oh man, these people, they listen to me, they value me, and they want me to speak up more. And when that changes into a role where people don't seem to value that, or they might on the surface seem like they do, or they appreciate your input, but thanks, but no thanks. It some people might deflate them. It made me more desperate to figure out just something I could manage. Cause at this point I'm just feeling like I'm on that little ship. I'm a little dinghy. There's no sail. I'm just in a storm. And I'm just like, whatever happens, I got no stake in this. I got no way to control this. And so, for example, I have a weekly meeting with all social brands, right? All brands, they're all social teams, basic weekly check-in, what worked, what didn't work. Are you trying to do anything new? Is there anything upcoming we should look forward to that you're trying? It's not the best meeting. just simply because, like I said, we are so siloed and we are so diverse in these brands. We brands that deal with fashion, we have brands that deal with pop culture, we have brands that deal with video games, music, we have parenting brands. There are so many things that we simply can't relate when it comes to content. But I was thinking, you know, I think there's a better way we can do this. Like, I wonder if we could, instead of having one large meeting, let's make it a better use of our time and let's just break these up into like more nuanced meetings. So like maybe all the parenting brands meet once a week and we talk about what worked. And then we can also talk about, maybe we could collaborate on these posts since we have, you know, this in common. We have so much of our audience is looking for the same thing. And ultimately I think we could benefit more. So I take this to my manager and I say, hey, you know what? I've been coming to these meetings and I'm like, I see what we're trying to do here. And I think it's good for these social teams to have an understanding of, you know, what's working on different platforms, what's not, any kind of algorithmic changes. Those are the things that we can share, but we're not really sharing in the content pool. Do you think it would be more effective to have maybe three separate meetings? You know, we have one for lifestyle and culture. We have one for fashion. Maybe we have one for parenting. And then we can kind of fit those in and those people have more in common. Now, I recognize this might mean that you would have to go to three meetings instead of one. And I think that's where he was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. So he goes, wow, like that's I hear what you're saying. And I understand where you're coming from. However,
but
I do think like this is important. But let me talk to this, you know, the other teams, and maybe the parenting brands can have like a monthly or bi-monthly meeting. So instead of dodging a weekly meeting that I thought was kind of pointless, I got an additional meeting a month that I care about even less. So I was like, well, that's the last time I try to be proactive and change things for the better, isn't it?
Jordan, can I just say, I so appreciate the honesty, like the real raw truth behind the not so great stuff, yeah. Honestly, because, you know, so many people try to just like sweep things under the rug when they talk to people about, oh, but it's fine. Oh, it's great. Sugarcoating shit, blah, blah. But if there's something that we really stand for on this podcast is keeping it real, and you have, and I am so grateful for that, because I think that especially nowadays, people are listening to you and saying, oh my God, I'm not the only one. Oh my God, somebody else is going through the same thing I'm going through, and mm-hmm. can feel the same frustration and can feel that same feeling of being stuck. So I think it's important to be able to say that and to be able to recognize that it's all not great. It's oftentimes kind of shitty. And I really, really thank you for just being so open about it.
And also, I wish people would be able to understand, you know, in this corporate world, that talking about things that don't work or identifying problems does not mean you're a problem. And I think that's oftentimes why, you know, someone saying you are chaotic good is that I'm just trying to be a problem solver. I'm recognizing things that aren't good for me. I talk to other people and realize, oh, that's also not good for them. Why are we still doing this? And I'm also not beat down by decades in the corporate market and field that I recognize that I'm just a little lonely player and I can't play a part in active change. Whereas I've just known it's the opposite. When I've wanted to do something, I've had people say, go do it, go try. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's never been punished. And at this point, I'm like, why would I ever go back? Why would I, you know, if I feel intimidated to talk to a boss or openly share ideas, yes. then what can I possibly contribute to a team? I mean, any employee can follow orders, but like no one else is going to have your ideas or your perspectives.
And that's why they brought you on in the first place. That was your innovation, bringing new ideas, not being afraid to try new things. So it must be really, really difficult when that thing is what you're kind of being shut down on now.
And back to the idea of Jordan being chaotic good, I think that people like you are the people that end up capable of challenging the status quo mm-hmm. and changing things for the better. Bringing a little positive chaos to an organization is oftentimes
necessary.
The only way to become mm-hmm. a change agent within yeah. that organization. So if the opposite is what's happening, then I can totally see how, you know, that can absolutely eat at your soul. But I also feel like, and I have to ask you this question, as from one positive person to the other, even though we have our shit days just like everybody else, is there anything positive? Is there anything that you've been able to learn, even among the really difficult stuff that you're going through? What's been a silver lining? What's been a learning, even amidst the shit?
Yeah, I think it's helped me value the people that I work with directly. You know, that original team, even though we've been narrowed down to the few, the proud. I just made a Marines joke.
I got it.
The few, the proud, the Marines.
Yeah. To our Gen Z listeners, the few, the proud, the Marines was the tagline for the Marines.
The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hey, okay, where was I?
About the positive
right, the
things.
Positive thing, the positive things. Okay, the positive things. No, I think it's really taught me to value the people who I have good working relationships with, because I realized that before this acquisition, I was like, oh, I can just be in a job where everyone's great.
You take it for granted, yeah.
Right, and just seeing like the power of good recruiting and hiring and knowing, you know, seeing people as actual human resources and how do you put them together in an amalgamation that will create something great. And looking back, like I'm, even though we are a small team, we are still very good at working together. I mean, I think we have very good relationships. We have very good boundaries and trust in what we can do and what we can't do. And we also know that, you know, talking about problems and identifying things that we are unhappy with, that's the key to innovation. You have to see something that needs a change before you can change it. And so right now, because we're so small, we've become so flexible and able to pivot on a dime and make changes as necessary, because the three of us are just constantly just like an ideas machine now. The one good thing to not being on, you know, we're kind of like the redheaded stepchild of this company. The good thing about that is that they don't really care what we do because we apparently aren't that important. And so we're able to innovate. Like I talked about, that's one of our passions, is to be able to see what works and what doesn't. Yeah. And that there's not all this weight and pressure and ad dollars behind, you know, we got to make sure this works or else heads are going to roll. It's like,
no one will care.
Just about anything. And like, what are you going to do? Fire 33% of a brand? Like, you can't take anyone else away. It won't work. Like, we're all doing five people's jobs ourselves. So at this point.
But so that is a really important skill that you will take on later, because if you're able to function and do that brand the way that you guys do it, which is amazing, like the level of the way you churn things out, the response, it's mind blowing. You tell me right now that there's three people behind that and I'm blown away. So if tomorrow you're in a different place where you have, I don't know, six people, it'll be like, you can get things done with the most nimble team. And that keeps you, again, on your toes and being highly productive. Yeah. So that is something that you will own and take with you wherever you go. Not saying that you're going anywhere, but, you know, in your next endeavor or whatever it is that you decide to do in your future.
I'm not unappreciative of my job. I have one of the best jobs ever. I literally just wake up and I read jokes and I write jokes and I make funny little quips and I get to be a snarky little asshole in the comments.
And there you go.
Like, not a lot of people get that opportunity. And I recognize that this is great. And they give me health insurance to do that. I mean,
thank you for the perspective. Thank you for the perspective.
Things are fine. I'm okay. I am all right. But it's also just good to recognize that even though things are okay, they can be better. It doesn't mean that there aren't things that are wrong, and that doesn't mean that you should sweep those under the rug. You can always improve things. You can always improve things.
Talk about a good piece of advice there. I love that.
Wow, there's going to be a beautiful music transition so people can take this in and reflect.
Da 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 da.
Okay, so we are ready for our section of, are you ready? Corporate confessions.
Oh my God.
Not that you haven't been in a confessional already for the last.
Yeah, let's get down to the nitty gritty. How about that?
So now is the part where you don't hold back.
Okay, what is your most despised corporate buzzword or phrase?
Oh God, there's so many. When you all said it earlier, my body had like a physical adverse reaction. Like I was a cat that just saw like a cat that it hates, and like all the hair just like stood up. It's the idea of like growth. It's
going to
be a growing opportunity. Stretch opportunity. What is this, yoga class? Get out of here. No. Like, I feel, don't get me wrong. Like, I know that this is supposed to be a positive thing, and it often is. Growth is crucial, and growth is uncomfortable. And in order to learn and change, it takes, you have to go against what's normal for you, right? Mm-hmm. And that takes work. But it's when management uses that as like, oh, like you got it. We're going to make you take out the dumpsters 6 days a week. It's a growing opportunity. Like, no, it's just a shit job that you don't want to do.
In that accent?
Yeah.
In that like Jersey.
This is the Brooklyn Pizzeria Brooklyn, corporate life. Yeah. Or New Jersey if you want. This isn't a growing opportunity. This is something you didn't want to do, Frank. Like, don't put this on me.
Yeah, when it's used to manipulate you into thinking that it's an opportunity for you and only for you, and like, yeah, and you're
right.
You're
reframing something negative into something positive for your benefit, not for mine. Don't do that. Also, don't call this a family like you care about me. No.
It's like, I study psychology. I know what you're doing.
I know what you're doing. I know your tricks. I've used them all myself.
So, Jordan, what is the nicest thing someone has ever said to you at work?
Ooh, man, everyone's a jerk to me. So,
sure. Except Joel.
Except
apparently.
Joel. What's wrong with him, right? Like, man,
I know something.
No, it'd probably be what we talked about before. It's Joel kind of opening up and saying, opening up? What is this?
Therapy, apparently.
It's Joel telling me, talking about valuing, you know, that innovative spirit and seeing that, you know, my ability to identify problems and ways to, you know, perpetuate change and to bring positive additions and to look past the status quo, which is crucial. I realize it's crucial in social media, but like if you're able to take that into any field.
Absolutely. Any industry needs that. Yes.
There's so many barriers and boundaries, and we just put so much emphasis on positions and, like, you know, there's all these hierarchies, and it's like, we're all just people. We're all people. And if you're a good manager, you want to bring in people who feel just as passionate about this thing as you are. If you are, you don't have to trick me into doing something. I'll want to do it. I'll be looking for ways to grow. I'll be seeking these things out. I just read a tweet last week. It was something along the lines of, it's just so messed up in America that you can get in trouble at work. Like, I'm 35 and you're going to write me up? You're just a human too that's been in this job longer than I have. It's so, stop acting
Jordan,
like
Jordan, pushing back against organizational hierarchies.
And I understand the importance.
Keep fighting that fight, Jordan.
I'm hearing HR and legal going like, yes, they do have to write you up because there is legal liability and we're going to get sued. Blah, blah,
blah. And we will have compliance issues.
Like, I understand why these things are here, but like, I also understand that these things can be blown out of proportion so much. And we attach so much of our identity to our jobs
that
it's like, oh, if someone misunderstands or goes against my authority, then they're going against me. And it's like, respect is earned. And it's like, yeah, it is earned.
We're going Texan.
Now we're Texan.
So, and I've known you for 3 months and you're training me, Daryl.
Hey, Matthew McConaughey.
All right.
I hear you.
Jordan, what is the shittiest thing someone has ever said to you?
That's really hard because I am a people pleaser. I don't know if you could tell. I'm able to if something like I did something wrong, I'm really able to at least fake feeling very bad about it. And it's like, to the point that you're like, oh no, he does feel really crushed about not turning in that report on time. I don't want to kick the puppy. Look at his little eyes. Like, that's kind of what it feels like. So I feel like I'm not a very good target.
I'm just so likable that no one has said anything mean to me.
This isn't like the word, like the meanest thing, but it was like the most pushback I've gotten from something that I didn't like expect. And I'm still friends with this person. I'm very good friends with this person. So she is one of the people who has since gone her own way away from the dad. She did it before. She wasn't laid off. She quit. She wanted to pursue other things. She's doing great stuff. She's writing. But there is a point where she was in charge when we had actual like products to sell. But when we had an online shop still, those were the days. And she was managing all of it. And I just came in, little innovator that I am. I was like, hey, I've been noticing, this is back when I was just doing social media management. I was knee deep in comments every day. I was very sad. But I was thinking, we have all of these, you know, we have a ton of dads following us. We have like, it's pretty split down the middle when it comes to the gender gap for the dad's audience, which is really cool. And I was thinking, you know, we have all these products for dads. Is there anything like dad adjacent we could possibly design or do that would be like, this is for moms, but it's a joke about dads. Like, could we like brainstorm something? And granted, this is like April 2020. We are like deep in unknown COVID territory. Everyone's been home for 2 weeks. She has two kids who are like elementary school, middle school. She's got a lot on her plate. But it was one of these like, hey, what do you think about this? Hey, do we want to make a shirt maybe sometime? I don't know. And then she was like, maybe I'll stick to this stuff. Like, I know what I'm doing. I know what we've seen and what we need. Okay. And I was just like, okay, I'll never talk about this again. I'm so sorry. I felt bad about that for weeks. I was like,
really?
I held on to that for so long. It probably didn't help that it's like someone that I like admire as a person, and I think she's very talented and good at what she did. And I was like, I just never had this kind of experience, and I didn't mean to offend. I'm so sorry.
And she probably just like, whoop, doesn't even remember.
Gone. I bet she's never thought about it since. I mean, knowing her, she was probably dealing with something that day that I didn't know about, which is great advice, by the way. If someone freaks out on you, just assume it's they're having a bad day.
Yeah.
If it happens again, then you can beat them up. But like once, let it
go.
Slide.
So you've mentioned this before, but it may be something else, maybe another person, a person who has been very impactful for your career in a good or bad way, and what you learned from that.
I did just like go on a Joel rampage, just like boosting. I've given more to his ego today than he ever deserves. Let me tell you that much right now. Let me just spend a lot of time dragging him down.
Yeah, let's talk about the bad moments.
How about that? We just spend the next 15 minutes a roast session on Joel Willis.
That mean ass man.
No, Joel is great. He's a wonderfully creative person, and I feel like I'm reading like a hostage. He is a good boss and creates an environment where employees feel a degree of ownership over the product. I'm like Morse code with my eyes. SOS.
Blink twice if you're under duress.
But I will tell you, maybe the not great manager. Let's go that route, because that's something I haven't talked about. And I haven't said enough negative things today. I did my job before I switched over to the dad. Like I said, I was doing in-home counseling work with kids. It's a brutal job. I mean, I was working toward my license in Virginia, and I had to do a certain number of hours. And for a while after grad school, I graduated looking for a job. And this guy reached out to me, and I had a conversation with him. And he was like, look, I know this isn't for everybody. I mean, because when you're studying counseling, in-home's kind of like someone says in-home counseling, they're just like, oh boy. Because it's always like in-home is the last step before someone is like institutionalized.
Wow.
It's the last ditch thing. It's like this person is either a harm to themselves or others, or they just can't really survive on their own. They need a lot of significant help. If you aren't able to do it, they're going somewhere where someone else does it for them.
Oh, wow.
It's brutal. Like every day going in there, those are the things that you're working against, kids.
Yeah.
So these are kids often gotten in fights. These are, you know, might have significant behavioral issues. They might have, you know, fought their parents. They might be violent. They might, you know, set fires. They might just have very significant learning disabilities. They might be, you know, they might be nonverbal in the autism spectrum. Like it could be any number of things to the point that they aren't really able to function. And I got a call from this guy, and we had a conversation, and he's saying, look, I'd love for you to come in and have a conversation. We're especially looking for men. There's a lot more women in the field of counseling than there are men. And so especially when you're dealing with adolescents, it's a lot more boys with behavioral issues. It's like 80% or higher. In a lot of those situations, a male is a better person for that role, sometimes physically. Like sometimes I have had to learn how to properly hold down a child that is getting too aggressive, that is getting physically violent.
Wow.
So I'm looking back, I'm like, oh no, I was just like, I was someone that he really needed because there were no other men in his staff. As I continued to work with this guy, it was a very like my way or the highway kind of thing. I know how this works. If you went against him, it was one of these guys like I talked about with your like attaching things to your identity. It's like everything was a part of who he was as a person. And so if you disagreed with any of that, it wasn't just
you were attacking him personally.
Yeah, that's a personal offense.
You were not trying to improve things. You were not trying to be an innovator, a positive innovator in the workplace. You were going against his authority. And we're just not going to have any of that.
Wow.
So not only was I dealing with a lot out in the field, I just didn't have management that I cared about at all and that I trusted. And that is a brutal combo.
It was probably more draining than the kids.
Maybe.
Yeah, no wonder that led to the burnout, of course.
So shout out to Roger in Virginia.
Hey, Roger, listen to this.
And overall, wrapping up, Jordan, what would you say are your top we like to call them surfing strategies, your advice to listeners at the time to navigate like really hard moments or in general corporate life, what would you say?
Yeah. I think really just kind of piggybacking off what I've said a lot before is that corporations are people, you know? So if you're able to have good relationships, if you're able to trust the people you're working with, if you're able to know the people you're working with, that things are going to be a lot better for everybody. You know, remember people's names. You know, when you email them, talk to them. Like,
wow, I suck at that.
It's the idea of being seen. It's being known and understood.
Listen, Jesse, that, you know, for me, that's just not so easy.
That's not so easy for me, Alice. You see. No, but it's understanding people. And like when you do that and when people like, yeah, I'm a people pleaser, but like people like me because I'm open to discussions. Like I rarely take things very personally. Like I don't, and because of that, like I get riled up at things that simply don't make sense. I don't get riled up at things when someone says something, I didn't do a good job. I just want to get better from that. But if you say, if you're trying to make me do something that doesn't make sense, or you're like slighting somebody for some reason that doesn't make sense, that's the stuff where I'm like, I'm going to fight for this with everything I have for justice, you know, like it just feels like this is so those things feel so easy to fix. And it's like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this?
Here comes chaotic good.
Mr. Chaotic Good.
I feel like Chaotic Good has to become a superhero. Can we make Mr. Chaotic Good a thing?
I don't even know. Would he be like a very like bright pastel colored or just like really grunge and like against the establishment, kind of a lot of like studded leather jackets and things. He's really good at his job, but it's like, does he shower a lot? I don't know. Like,
but he's such a good person. Who cares? My gosh, thank you so much. This has been really a really, really fun conversation.
And so I'm glad I could bring it.
I love getting to know you more, Jordan.
Yeah, this has been great, Jordan. I really appreciate it. And I think this episode is going to resonate with people in such a way. So at least feel that the shit that you're going through is for a greater purpose. You're serving the greater good.
The greater good.
You're helping others.
Through my own suffering, a phoenix arises from the ashes.
Like I could just stay and talk to you like forever, but I know you have a job that requires, you know, all your brain power.
This whole time I've just been looking at my watch like, God, when can I get back to these meetings? Oh my God. Need it.
Today's episode of Serving Corporate was sponsored by Joel Willis. Serving Corporate was produced and edited by me, Eileen Mercier, and made better by the feedback of Kalenda Pakkanens. You can follow today's amazing guest, Jordan Stratton, on social media everywhere. He's like on all of those things. You can also follow Serving Corporate on LinkedIn and Instagram. If you like today's episode, give us a 5-star rating or share it with a friend. Sign up for our newsletter at servingcorporate.com/subscribe. Our original theme music is by Chaliwa Music. Thanks so much for listening. Hang in there, corporate servers.